Actually, I'd like to plug a course as well. I'm offering the CIMC is trying an experiment in May, offering a daytime course for the first time. So we'll start the first week in May. I think it's on a Monday, and it'll go from 10:30 till 12. And I'm hoping maybe people can stay around for lunch. I'll do that as much as I can, probably not every time, but most of the time. And its title is somewhat related to what I'm going to talk about tonight, Letting Go, Opening the Heart. Which, you know, another way to phrase it would be not clinging. And if you ask the Buddha what his teaching is fundamentally about, it's about not clinging to anything as me or mine. So there's a very famous quote from Ajahn Chah, who was a Thai forest master, who taught many of the senior teachers here, very well respected. He said, if you let go a little bit, you'll have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of peace. And if you let go completely, you'll have complete peace. So there you go. End of Dharma talk, right? You know, it'd be nice if it worked that way. And sometimes it does out of wisdom. You know, there's a serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And really, if we can't change things, does it really make sense to project worry, fear, get upset about it? It's not helpful for us. Shantideva, I think he's an 8th century monk, said something very similar. He said, if you can do something about it, do it. If you're not, can't, why worry about it? So I'll give you a little example of that, and part of it's, I think, maybe just a little amusing and a little embarrassing for me to tell, but it just, I don't know, maybe nobody else has a mind like this, but I was on retreat last month, and I was staying at a place that was up a very steep, long road, private road, so it wasn't getting plowed, and I got snowed in, and the blizzard was on the way. And I thought, well, I got enough food, no problem. And I don't usually drink coffee on retreats, but this retreat, I don't know, I found this way to make this great coffee, and I would just get up in the morning and have one cup, and then I'd sit for a couple, you know, I'd have these great sittings, and I thought, I only have enough coffee for 2 days. And then I thought, well, I could walk in town, it's only a little over a mile. But they only sell ground coffee, and it's probably not going to be very good. And then I thought, well, you know, I'll get on the internet, and I'll really treat myself well. I'll order some George Howe coffee, this really gourmet coffee. And, you know, and then I thought, well, if I can't get out, they can't get in. And then the thought came up, I can live without coffee. So sometimes it really works that way, you know, but, you know, when a loved one's left you or you've been betrayed or trauma comes up or, you know, there's this rage about something, it just doesn't work that way. And what is rarely quoted that Ajahn Chah also said was that monks know about letting go, but 90% of the time they can't do it. So letting go implies that we're holding on to something. The Pali word is upadana. It gets translated sometimes as a basis, sometimes identifying with. It's my emotion, da da da. But it's really the translation used most of the time is clinging. It's a very figurative word. Something kind of desperate and unnecessary, just holding on with our dear life to something or trying to get rid of something so bad. And the reason I entitled the talk, How Does Letting Go Happen, is that who would choose to cling to unpleasant emotions? Who would cling to thought reactions to unpleasant bodily sensations intentionally? The thing is that you don't cling. Clinging is a reflex. And a sense of you arises from it. So just notice sometimes how strong the sense of I is when you don't want something, you really want something. And the clinging itself arises from basically what is the second noble truth, the cause of suffering. The Buddha says the cause of suffering is tanha. And tanha is often translated as desire. But desire's got a lot of meanings. And there can be really healthy desires, motivations to do things. And it's something you have control over. Tanha, the etymology for it, is thirst. You don't decide to be thirsty. So the core cause of suffering, stress, dissatisfaction, is this thirst. Thirst for what? Thirst for pleasant sense experiences. Thirst to become someone, to be a good person, to be a smart person, to be an attractive person. Thirst not to be anything, just to get away from all this. And that craving arises really from our sense of separation from things, of not being adequate, of someone outside the world, which is how the sense doors create our perspective of the world. Now, I've given a talk on that, and I could do that tonight. But so from craving, which is a reflex, it gets strong, there's clinging, and then in the Buddha kind of dependent origination, there's becoming, and then moi arrives, you are born. And this happens over and over again. It's not like you're some solid thing. You know, you're craving for a great cup of coffee, you have that, and then you think, oh, you know, I really like to have something else. And then the craving starts again, the clinging, da-da, another person gets created. So that's how the process works. So the first step really is to recognize there's some form of clinging taking place, that you're holding on to something. And that might seem like, well, yeah, I can always recognize that. And I love a story Narayan told a long time ago, which is she came to, when she first came to the center, and she had been practicing in another spiritual tradition, and she was breaking up with someone in the other spiritual tradition. And Larry Rosenberg said, I'm sorry you're suffering so much. And Narayan said, suffering? I'm not suffering. I just hate her. One way to notice his clinging is really unskillful emotions, rage, anger, the sense of I. As soon as it's her I, I don't want this, I got rid of this, that's clinging. It's a sense of contraction, which I think is why clinging is such a great word for it. The mind just contracts, focuses on something, and the whole world becomes that. I remember one night I was giving a talk, and some guy, it was like his nose, itchy nose, was this whole world. He just couldn't be with it. And the mind's really crazy like that. I mean, it's just, you know, I spent a month in March, and it's just like one moment, I want to get out of here. I want to go home. And like, you know, 5 minutes later, I could be here forever. And it's just, when you can just step back and just watch the craziness of it. It's not you. It's a bunch of patterns that have been learned. And so the way out, Ajahn Sucitto talks about four steps, four aspects, four different ways of, qualities of letting go, of deeper and deeper qualities. And the first one, the Pali word, is viveka. And it's kind of a stepping back, a withdrawal. So you kind of, you know, you're all fired up. I can't stand this. I can't be with this pain another minute. Or, you know, I'm with this rage and whatever. Just to step back from it all, to cool things down. And that's a skill. It's something to be cultivated. certainly a huge part of that is learning to be more in the body. The body is a place, our ground. The mind just, it will always find trouble. And when I say mind, I really mean, in the Buddhist sense, citta is a mind-heart. It's just a mind and emotions together. You know, if they're left alone, they'll find some problem somewhere. And the body is a place we can discharge these emotions. So let me just be clear that this withdrawal is not out of aversion. It's not like I don't want to be with it. It's really to make room for it. So you want to be able to be with the experience but not lost in it. Okay. An approach that Ajahn Sucitto talks about, I really like, and these are some phrases maybe you just want to keep in mind, is softening and widening. So part of the softening is the body, just to maybe really upset, to just come into the body and start seeing if you can find places where it's contracted. Just, you know, maybe just bringing your attention to them allows them to soften sometimes. And also, by bringing your attention to the body, it's not so focused on all the turmoil and ideas and things and upset, because it's redirecting the attention a little bit. Widening in the sense of maybe there's a part of the body that doesn't feel good. And that's what the clinging is about. I got to get rid of this. So you can widen in the sense of feeling the whole body rather than focusing on the part that hurts so much. Or even being aware of the space around the body. If the body really hurts, you can, you know. And one thing it's just really fascinating just how much the mind fabricates the body, actually constructs how the body feels. You know, when I was down on retreat, the next thing you know, it's like the separation between the inside and outside just starts dissipating. So one thing is widening and softening the body. It's also widening and softening the mind. And I love Ajahn Sucitto, giving credit to the wrong person, Joseph Goldstein. You know, and the sky is blue. So all this drama is going on, and you know, the sky is blue. It's kind of a way to sort of widen the perspective. Like, I mean, how many things have we been through that seems so, like, it's like my, I got to get out of here, that seems so powerful. And then in retrospect, you know, really. I had the one time where I was on, I had a meltdown. I was just tired. I was getting up at 3 and 4 in the morning. I was walking in these really long walks in the cold, you know, and I was doing some Qigong, and I just started crying, you know. And my memory was that it lasted about 2 days. But I had been dictating little notes, you can do that on, and I went back and looked, it lasted about 2 hours, actually. In terms of coming to the body, paying attention to breathing can really be helpful. And just raising the question, how is my breathing, sort of lowers the charge a little bit. And this is, you know, part of dealing with this is a real training to be with the rhythm of the breathing. You know, sometimes we're supposed to watch your breath, but it actually has a rhythm to it. So you can start turning your attention to that. Sometimes bringing in qualities of kindness or compassion or equanimity is really helpful. Just asking a question, you know, may I hold this in the spaciousness of my heart? It's an equanimity phrase. And it's got, you know, it's not cold, but it's, can I be big for this? Just make room for it. Or maybe compassion. May I care for my pain and sorrow? And it's not just the phrases, but we're trying to form a heart intention about to meet this. That rather than trying to get rid of it, can we bring kindness and compassion to it? Can we open to it and allow it to just be? When I was, there's a couple of, sometimes this seems rather artificial to do this, but a lot of times that kind of response is organic. So I was on a retreat quite some time ago, and it was one of these mind-boggling, insight-freeing retreats, and I had been with these two teachers for about 6 weeks, and then two new teachers came in, and one I got along with just fine, but the other one thought I was totally deluded. And I thought, well, you know, I'm not going to see her again. I don't have to deal with this. And then she put up a little note saying, would you like to meet again? And I wrote back, yes, you know. And then I went into a rage. I mean, really, I'm going to straighten her out, blah, 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 blah. And you know, I'm pretty good at calming down, and I just couldn't. I went out for a walk. Still, this rage is going on in my. And then I just thought, you poor thing. It must be so hard to fill this role all the time. It's a defender part of me that fights battles, often unnecessary battles, out of a history. And as soon as I did, it was just like, so we have to really open up to love these parts of us. We just soon go away. Because as much as more we resist them, you know, what resists persists. That's a phrase. And as soon as I did that, it just quieted down. It was fine. So all the other stuff was kind of like, okay, I'll sit with this. I'll be with the breathing. I'll do some work. But there was a bargaining there. It was sort of like, if I do this... You know, it's impermanent, right? It's supposed to go away, but it wasn't. And it's so important to be with these patterns, to make room for them, to just allow them to do what they need to do, because they're locked in the body. They're like programs, habitual programs. And the way they get released is to be with them, but not lost in them. And it's important, if it's too much, get away from it. So you really have to be careful about, am I just reinforcing this, getting locked up and just getting stirred up, or can I make room for it, have some level of equanimity for it to let it do what it needs to do? So one part of this withdrawal is saying, oh, this is the body. This is an unpleasant feeling. This is a thought. This is an emotion. Some teachers actually say, label it. There's anger, there's fear. And just maybe, okay, anger. And maybe underneath the hard emotion, there might be some really soft emotion, really hurt. So it's a way to kind of, I don't use that technique, but a lot of teachers do, and a lot of people find it helpful. So if you do, or to say, oh, there's fear, and ask yourself, what's happening now? And actually asking what's happening now is really helpful, because how much of the stuff that's going on is some projection about some future? Like my thing with the coffee, right? Well, you know, it turned out I had enough coffee last for a week, and when the blizzard came, it was all rain, and it melted all the snow. So it was all this kind of thought process that was just totally waste of time about some imagined future. And not only did I do that, I thought about, well, you know, how could I get the car down there? And if I can't get all the way back, maybe I could leave at the end of the road and walk up, you know. I mean, it was just totally waste. I didn't do it, though. The mind did it. That's an important thing. So when we settle down enough, and these words are just kind of pointers. There's nothing really like clear distinctions between them. But once the withdrawal, the stepping back, is enough, and there's enough cooling down, there's a sense of dispassion. We're just not so stirred up by all this. And, you know, dispassion is a really important word in the Buddhist tradition, but language is really tricky. It kind of sounds like you just don't care. But it's more a spacious quality of heart. It's an emotive making room for things, being big enough to open to it and care for it. And with dispassion, there's room for mindfulness. So mindfulness is knowing what you're doing when you're doing it. You know, you move a hand, you know you're moving a hand. You're having some thoughts, you know you're having the thoughts rather than being lost in the thoughts. The thinking is not a problem. It's being lost in the thinking. You're having emotion, you know you're having emotion. You're having bodily sensations, you know you're having bodily sensations. And what the thing about the... And the other quality of mindfulness is to keep bringing yourself back to the topic. So you're kind of framing up, I want to work with this unpleasant feeling, or I want to work with this emotion. And the mindfulness, you know, maybe you spin off on something else, the mindfulness is, oh, come back to this. So it's focusing on something so it can be with it long enough to see its nature. And you know, with the dispassion, we might just say, oh, well, this is just how the mind heart works. There's kind of like, okay, yeah, I've been here, done that before. We can see, you know, thoughts like, I can't stand this, aversion, doubt, judgment, anger, this is horrible, I can't stand this another minute, I'm no good. They're all just thoughts. So, okay, can I be with it for another breath, another minute? Because all these thoughts are kind of like just abstracting, contracting, getting... And actually the moment, okay, there's an out-breath. And actually the out-breath is really great. Just let the belly completely relax. Just drop down. Now, certainly another big aspect of this teaching is to focus on change. And, you know, in some intellectual way, maybe we're having difficult emotion or unpleasant bodily sensation, and we know it's going to go away. Or we think it's going to go away because we've had these experiences where it goes away and, you know, likely to go away again. I mean, there was a person in the elders group who was dealing with some physical pain, and, you know, he couldn't stand it. He thought this is the end of the world. And they said, you know, like, it's all gone. But, well, you know, sometimes it's impermanent, but it just changes. You know, it might be getting more intense. So it isn't just this idea of it's impermanent, it's going to go away, I know that. It's like, can you be with the moment-to-moment energy of it? So if you're having an unpleasant emotion, how do you know you're having an unpleasant emotion? Is it the same all the time? How's the breathing working? You know, is the mind running around saying things? And just to see to be with the moment-to-moment experience. I find the breath just so helpful that way, because you can just be aware of the breath's moving. It's changing, and its nature's changing all the time. So I think a lot of times when people come to practice at first, oh, being with breath, that's pretty boring. But when you start really learning to get intimate with it, it's changing all the time. And when you're really intimate with it, it's very soothing, very relaxing. Okay, so now we got two ways of letting go. And you can't skip them. You can't just skip over to, okay, I see it's impermanent, it's going to go. You really have to be with it, cool it down, and allow it to do what it needs to do. And so that's the withdrawal part and the dispassion part. And that's where we spend most of our life. Okay? Now, the third kind of letting go, the Pali word is nirodha. It means something like cessation or stopping. And it's kind of like the input that causes all this stuff just doesn't happen so much anymore. And it's not like a black or white thing. We might just have a few minutes of it. And really notice, I mean, we all have these experiences. Just pay attention to them, because the more you pay attention to them, the more you're going to want to be there. It's just where it's just like you see it, all this stuff, the mind constructing, fabricating emotions, what I need, what I don't need, how I am. And it kind of sees through that, and it just stops providing all these inputs that cause all the trouble. And you might have a few moments. So that's the third level, nirodha, stillness. And the fourth level, vasagra. It's like the PhD of letting go. It's seeing through this sense of self, which is kind of the cause of the whole problem, the sense of separation, that none of this is me or mine. And, maybe at first it's intellectual level, but after a while it becomes an embodied experiential thing. It's really letting go of everything, even stillness. So when you think there's nothing left, you ask yourself, okay, let go of that too. Even the stillness. So Vasagha doesn't belong to anyone. It's just suchness. It's how the world is when we're not layering all our thoughts, emotions, views, opinions on top of it. It's just suchness as it isness. So the whole world, all these qualities, we attribute to it. It's just, the world's just the way it is, period. Not good, not bad, not pleasant, unpleasant. Okay. So I got 15 minutes, so I want to try another approach, and I'm not going to be able to do as much as I'd like with this. But so this is another way to go into this. And I give you, I think, just this quote might sort of focus one's practice. This is from the Buddha. I don't know what discourse it comes from, but it's in things of this nature are all over the place. He says, when the mind is not clinging, it is not agitated. When it is not agitated, it attains nibbana. So, if we have a moment of not clinging, that's a moment of nibbana. Nibbana is the Pali word for nirvana. It's an awakening moment. And really, the way to look at practice is we can have these moments and string them together. So a really good feedback on whether or not you're clinging is if you're struggling with something. And sometimes it's just really helpful to ask, what's my attitude right now? Is there something I want to get rid of? Something I want? Something I want to change? So just exploring what it is that's going on right now that we're not accepting or allowing. Okay? And it isn't so much we need to have an answer to it, but just answering the question, asking the question helps us not identify with what's going on. Some it sort of takes you out of the thought process, or the, maybe if the clinging's in a form of a contracted body. Oh, look at this. The other part of when you're finding that you're clinging to something is again to focus on the changing nature of things. Now, an interesting part of when you're focusing on change, at that point, the mind is not clinging. Because you're with the flow of experience. So let's maybe just take a few minutes. Actually, it would be good to take longer, but we don't have time. Just explore this a little bit. Just now, sit and relax. If you want to close your eyes, that's fine. You don't need to. And just let it, you don't even have to be aware. Awareness is already there. Just let awareness be aware of what's happening. And perhaps you'll notice the body expanding on the in-breath and contracting on the out-breath. You might notice the level of energy increasing on the in-breath. And if you really let the out-breath be complete, the energy drops down. And if you continue this in a for a while, find the whole body will start to soften. You might notice the sounds of my voice arising and then ceasing? You might notice the silence between the words. You maybe might notice thoughts arising, perhaps the gaps between the thought. And maybe just noticing how things are coming and going all on their own. You don't have to do anything at all. The breathing's doing its thing, sounds are coming and going, thoughts are coming and going. So now, continue to do that, but just step back a little bit and notice what the quality of the mind is. And perhaps, maybe you need to do this longer, you might notice that the mind's not agitated, it's at peace. This is almost like a visceral experience of what non-clinging is, of what peace is, of what nibbana is. There might be a sense of stillness. Maybe the mind's not providing a lot of input. It's just at ease. Perhaps a quality of peace. Okay. So, I don't know. It's just a little experiment. You can play with this some on your own. But it's just like when we can be... Life is a... Actually, someone sent me an email in response to an article I sent them a while ago, and they said, you know, it's from Ajahn Tanissero. He said, one of our biggest problems is we see things as objects when life is a process. There's this continually flowing experience, the continued flow of conditions. And we just allow the conditions to flow, the mind's at peace. We have nibbana moments. Nirvana is a verb. It's not some place we arrive at. It's this continual being with the flow, not holding on to anything. So we can also use this being with the flow in reverse. That we can notice when the mind's agitated, we're clinging to something. And turn that around and start exploring what we're clinging to. And we can shift towards watching the flow of experience. Perhaps some really extreme emotion, if you can make enough room for it, you can start seeing that it's not something solid. And it might be unpleasant. But if, and this is so much about what practice is, and starting to do it with little things, is creating enough calm, enough steadiness to be able to be with us and not lost in it. So this watching the impermanence, the flow, you know, it can be on a moment-to-moment experience, or it can just be aware of the change that that happens big time, you know, death, loss of relationships, everything comes and goes. And in the early Buddhist teaching, there's a disciple, Kodana, who listens to the Buddha and he awakens. Now, these stories are always about these people awakening like that, but if you look at the monks and nuns stories, it doesn't quite work that way. But he hears the Buddha and he sees things are impermanent. Well, we all know everything's impermanent, right? And poets write about things being impermanent. So what's the difference? And the difference is, he says, Kodana sees the cause of causally arisen things. What he does is he sees that this mind creates this whole world. It creates all these objects, thoughts, everything. And he sees that. He sees how the mind constructs the world. So it's not that things are impermanent. It's that we create things. They're just conditions flowing. When I was on retreat, I spent a lot of the month reflecting. I'm going to talk about this in the elders group next Tuesday and a lot of other places. I've been asked to do in the church. There's a talk by Ajahn Sucitto called Not Waiting for Nibbana. I've listened to the talk a lot of times. It's really rich. And there's a section where he quotes, you know, there's these five reflections that we do in Buddhism. First three, old age, I'm subject to old age, sickness, and death. And the fourth one is everything that is mine, beloved, or pleasing will change. And you might ask yourself, what is the Buddha doing? Trying to make us unhappy, depressed? It's when the mind really sees into itself. It sees how it constructs this whole world out of views, opinions, concepts. We live in a conceptual world, an abstract world. That's what we think reality is, this abstract concepts. And when the mind sees through that, sees through all the problems that tanha craving causes, it sees that everything breaks up, everything comes and goes. And I found that reflection so freeing. I can't protect my wife, I can't protect my sons, I can't protect myself. Everything breaks up. But it's not just like it breaks up big time, it breaks up moment to moment. Every emotion, every thought comes and goes. And when the mind sees into that, it's like awareness sees into awareness. And there's something there that's at peace, compassionate, without opinions, that's kind of encompasses everything. So I guess I want to close with just this particular thought. Practice isn't about getting somewhere, getting some state. It's about not clinging right now. So we have to do a lot to be able to not cling right now when things are really difficult. But one moment of not clinging is a moment of nibbana, nirvana, awakening. So it's having the steadiness just to be with the flow of things. Okay. So I'm going to stop there. And
thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.